And welcome to the January 16, 2024 episode of The Musical Universe of Professor Hurst. This is Craig W. Hurst, Emeritus Professor of Music, podcasting from my music bunker, along with my faithful canine companion, Carmel the Wonder Dog, to share with you my latest musical interests and discoveries. I claim no special inside information about the latest or greatest music, nor do I know everything there is to know about music. What I am is a lover of music. I enjoy several genres of music, and I share with you what has currently caught my interest, old, new, outdated, and everything in between. Even old music is brand new if you have never heard it before. The universe of music is a vast one to enjoy. From my discussions, you might find something new to you and of interest to expand your own musical universe. I currently receive no compensation or motivation of any kind from any recording label, recording artist, or the estate of any performer or composer dead and gone to discuss their music and or recordings. Now with that out of the way, welcome to my musical universe. My guest today is Americana singer-songwriter Mikhail Laxton. Ottawa-based singer-songwriter Mikhail Laxton released his self-titled album on August 18, 2023 via Acronym Records' Howling Turtle Incorporated. A new crop of songs from the core of his being, the album firmly establishes him as one of the most vital forces within the Canadian music scene. No matter what genre labels are placed upon him, there can be no disputing that Laxton has his own timeless sound, the product of a unique life experience, and Mikhail Laxton is a collection that carries the weight of the last 7 years of trying to rebuild his career and life. The topics in the album range from loss and longing to missing home, the feeling of being broken, and moments of love. The past few years have affected us all in ways we are only beginning to understand. We've had to confront our mortality, often due to the unexpected loss of loved ones. We've come face to face with the indisputable truth that relationships are fragile and that expressing pure emotion takes courage. And for some of us, it's been confirmed that the only real solace lies in the creation of art. The plague is receding, but not yet dead. It's turned many of us hard and cold, suspicious and wary. It is now the task of artists to help us get back in touch with who we once were. As 2020 got underway, Mikhail Laxton was set to open the next chapter of his life. Having moved from Australia to Ottawa upon marrying the love of his life, he had landed a record deal and made his debut EP, Real, a collection of soul folk gems reflecting that whirlwind transition period. But what should have been the wider world's introduction to Mikhail's immense talent, already established in his homeland through appearances on Australia's version of The Voice, was lost in the cacophony of pandemic confusion. Yet it had seemed too easy, and cruelly so. As one obstacle followed another, Mikhail coped the only way he could, by wiping the slate clean and re-emerging with a new crop of songs drawn from the core of his being. His new album is simply entitled Mikhail Laxton, because it is who he is. My mind wasn't even on the pandemic when it started because I was in Australia with my mom, who was battling stage 4 cancer, Mikhail explains. My first single, Hold On, came out 10 days before she died in July 2020, and it seemed like everything was completely out of my control. Things were supposed to be just beginning at that point, but honestly, it felt like it was already over. When he, his wife, and young child did catch a flight back to Ottawa, there was a further 2 weeks of quarantine, a time he says he barely remembers due to complete exhaustion. However, at the end of it, he picked up his guitar and wrote his first song in 18 months. It was a moment when he realized the changes had naturally affected his songwriting process as well. I didn't intend to write a new album. I just started writing, he says. Even just prior to the pandemic, I think I was caught up in this idea of what the industry wanted from me, and the work wasn't feeling as enjoyable anymore. I had to face up to the fact that I wasn't being true to who I am, with a big part of that being my identity as an Aboriginal man. Once I reconnected with that, the songs started pouring out of me, containing the entire spectrum of emotions. Looking at it all now, I'm actually a little amazed at what I was able to do. In November 2021, Mikhail was ready to record. He once again enlisted the services of producer Aaron Goldstein, who had also produced Lee Harvey Oswald and Daniel Romano, who had produced the original version of the song Streams that got him signed to Acronym Records. After a week of pre-production with some of Toronto's top-shelf session players, they were able to capture the most cathartic performances Mikhail has committed to tape to date. He says, "The night before the first actual recording session, I was sitting in my manager's kitchen, and he asked how I was feeling. It hit me then that I'd never felt more prepared for anything in my life." Indeed, the contrast between his first EP and Mikhail Laxton is striking. Not only does Mikhail Laxton fulfill the promise of his debut, it firmly establishes him as one of the most vital new voices within the Canadian music scene. It is my pleasure to welcome to my musical universe, Mikhail Laxton. Hello, Mikhail.
G'day, how are you?
Well, I seem to be doing quite well, and it is really great to talk with you and have the opportunity to have you as a guest on my show today and to learn more about you and your music. Anyway, Mikhail, one of the stock questions, I guess you might say, I ask all of my guests, I'm interested in everyone's origin story. And so what I would like you to talk about is who or what turned the light on for you? What motivated you to play guitar, sing, and write songs?
What motivated me to play guitar, write songs, and sing them? Okay. So to answer that specific question, I always had something for music. There's a story that my mom used to tell me that because my dad was a musician, he was a bass player in a band and multi-instrumentalist, fantastic musician actually. But she said that when I was 3 months old, she took me to her first outing after being pregnant, after giving birth, and she took me with her, and she put me in a stroller right up to the front of the stage where the speakers were, and she said I just sat there and like tapped my foot away to the beat to every song all night. And so she's like, oh man, this kid's got it, you know? So what ended up happening was when I was about, fast forward to about 11 or 12 years old, I got my first guitar. My mom, just prior to that, my mom bought me a Carlos Santana album. Okay. I think it was a greatest hits album. With the Black Panther on it. It was just black with the Panther's face on it. And I just, that was my first CD. And I just fell in love with it. I fell in love with music. I started listening to a lot more music. Then I finally got a guitar, and one of those guys that I went to school with, he was a little bit younger than me, He lived just down the road from me, and his dad was a drummer in a band.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, the more I got to know them, I learned that Steve was a songwriter. I will say this, Steve just recently passed away. Mm-hmm. His son called me up and let me know, and that was actually quite a sad phone call, because I hadn't seen Steve in a long time, but he was a big part of my origin as a songwriter. Excuse me. And we were sitting down one night, and he was having a beer. We were just listening to music, and then he whipped out his little Telecaster, and he started singing some songs that he wrote. And he's like, "I was like, what? You write songs?" And I don't know what happened, but it just blew my mind that I was like, "Whose song is that?" And he's like, "Oh, it's mine." And he had this little folder with these sheets in it, and it just blew my mind that people wrote songs
mm-hmm.
in our town. Like, mm-hmm. it just, I don't know, like, you know, because mm-hmm. As a kid, you're obsessed with celebrities and,
oh yeah,
and everyone that writes songs lives in Hollywood or whatever, you know? So
right.
I was like, my mind was so blown, and I just sat there all night listening to him sing some songs, and they were heavily influenced by, like, a Beatles vibe, you know, different eras and whatever. I've realized now, I've recognized. And so that's when I started writing songs. Actually, I think I wrote my first song at his house. Uh-huh. And you know, I was like 11 or 12 years old. I wasn't really, you know, I was kind of interested in girls, but I wanted to write a love song. So I based it on my friend's stepmom.
Uh-huh. Sure.
that same friend's stepmom. So
uh-huh.
I was just like, I just looked at her and I was like, all right, I'm gonna write about you. So let's do that. And and then I don't know. I wrote a couple of songs after that when I was about 12, and then kind of didn't really, I enjoyed it, but I didn't really, you know, I was a kid, so I had other interests. But that was definitely the beginning. And I always uh-huh. remembered that, even during the period when I hadn't written anything
yeah.
until I became a songwriter, I always thought about that time. And so when I was like late teens, I started getting into it again.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I, you know, I was getting older and I started to enjoy music more for other reasons. And that was the origins of me wanting to write songs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wasn't much of a singer. I would sing the songs and I would sing songs or whatever, but I didn't class myself as a very good singer. And then when I started singing, I was about 18 years old. And here's where the real story comes in here. The big story is I left my hometown and I went to this town called Brisbane to be a part of this music, art, and dance school. And I ended up playing bass for a bit. I got put in a band. It was a pretty good band. And the guy was actually from Minneapolis, I think.
Okay.
His name's Caleb. And he's a great singer-songwriter. I ended up playing bass for his band. But then one day after class, I heard this beautiful song being sung. And I swear it was like a CD playing. And I was like, where is that coming from? So I went and looked. Couldn't find anything. And then all of a sudden there was this one of the students, one of the girls were in the room just singing away this beautiful song. And uh-huh. she was an incredible singer, incredible guitar player. And she was singing this incredible song. And I was like, what is that? That's amazing. And she's like, well, I can't take all the credit. It's a song called Colors by Amos Lee.
Uh-huh.
And I was just like, I got to know everything about this guy. And she's like, you're going to love him. Uh-huh. So that afternoon she took me into the computer lab or whatever it was, and I just sat there for the entire afternoon and night watching Amos Lee videos, and I was like, I reckon I could sing like this guy, because I was always uh-huh. good at emulating
uh-huh.
people
uh-huh sure,
you know, just out of comedy and making my parents laugh. So I just started emulating Amos Lee when I started singing, and sort of built off that. I started uh-huh. writing a lot more seriously after that. And so the reason why I write, the reason why I got into it was because my friend's dad, Steve Sellers,
uh-huh.
You know, he blew my mind when he introduced me to that anybody could write a song.
Yeah.
And then Amos Lee was the game changer for me.
Okay.
That was when I was like, I was participating in music and I really, really did love it. But that was like, I think I want to do that.
Okay.
I think I want to be a singer. I think I want to be a singer-songwriter.
All right.
So hopefully that answers your question quickly enough.
Well, I think that's a wonderful answer, and it introduces me to another artist I have not been aware of, Amos Lee, because I'll check out his recordings when we get done here, because sounds like he obviously had an important impact. But yeah, you know, it's I think it's always fun to put words together.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember when I was like in high school, I had a friend of mine, and we used to just have fun making up nonsense word poems. You know, one of us would come up with a, you know, it'd be a gibberish kind of or nonsense word antecedent phrase, and then we'd pass the note, be while we're in class, of course, right? Pass the note, and then the other person would make up another consequent phrase, and we'd kind of go back and forth and, until we almost got caught by the teacher. But it was just kind of a fun thing to do. And then when you realize that people can take and really put intelligent words together and a melodic line and harmony and all that and create a musical statement, it
Yeah.
really is kind of it's really cool to think that you know, and then when you like you came to that realization, you know, I can do that too. And then your creativity and you really get juiced up when you hear someone that inspires you and you go, yeah, I want to try and be like that. That certainly is a great story. And I think that you know, we all need kind of those models, I think. Someone that we emulate or excites us in some way. I know I've had the occasion to interview some young country artists who were studying at Belmont University in Nashville. And actually, I did not know this until I interviewed these two young people, that you could actually get a degree in songwriting
Oh, well, I
at
didn't know that
Belmont.
either.
I didn't know that. And I kind of it was interesting. And both of them have put out really quality recordings. They're you know, 18, 19, 20 years old, and they're already putting out some really nice stuff. But it is it's a wonderful art form, a wonderful craft to do that. But at the you know, when we get right down to it, even today, what typically motivates you to write?
What motivates me to write? Honestly, anything and everything.
Okay.
Anything and everything.
Would you consider yourself to be a an avid observer of people and situations and maybe find that that can be motivating?
I would say yes. But I'm more of an avid analyst of
Oh,
situations.
okay.
That's I like breaking down why somebody did something or why I did something. It's probably due to my anxiety, but
Yeah. Well, we're all neurotic. I mean, that's why we're artists.
No, I think to answer your question, your previous question, what motivates me? I think I missed the question how it was asked. I think the way I answered was inspired. What
Oh, okay.
motivates me to write, just to go back real quick, is probably now it's my children and my
Okay.
family.
Okay.
And that's pretty much it. Ever since they came along, that's when I was like, I've got to take this really seriously. If I'm going to do this, I've got to really do it. Because one, I want to do it so well to provide for them and be able to do that. And two, I want to be able to do it so well, but also want to be able to see them watch me chase my dreams so that they can chase their dreams too.
Okay.
I want to be an example to them. So that's what made it motivates me to songwrite, because then I get to sing, which is another motivation. And the other motivation is going to sound stupid, but I'm being honest, I'm an attention whore. I love being the center of attention, right? So you know, as you know, I consider myself to be a humble person, but Who doesn't like attention? You know what I mean? That's why we're all on fucking social media all the time and trying to get as many likes as we can. But I like what I have to offer other people. I like having to give people what I have to give. That's just who I am. So, like, just like a chef loves to cook for people and loves to just craft, like, somebody that really is passionate about cooking. Hospitality, people that are hospitable, their goal is to serve people because it just gives them so much fulfillment to be able to do that for somebody and then watch their faces and be like, I created this dish that's unbelievable to your palate. And that's what it's like for me too. For me, my music is another form of me being hospitable to people. Come into this space where I'm going to play my guitar as best I can and sing these songs that try to make you feel something. And that's my job, So overall, it's my family, but then it keeps breaking down into these little things where it's like there's a bunch of different motivations, and those are the core ones, I think. So
Yeah, well,
family,
I
attention whore.
sure. Well, I, you know, I hear you, I hear you saying a lot of things that I feel. I mean, yes, I think that I definitely am a like you. I like people to watch and listen, and I love to make people laugh.
Yeah,
And as
it
a
feels good. You
performer,
want more.
it does. And as a performer, we all love applause. We all love
Absolutely.
applause. And but like one of the things that I do, it's like I'm not a songwriter, but I love unearthing really old songs. I have a group, in fact, we're performing tomorrow night, one of my trios, and our basic motto is when I introduce the group, I say, we are purveyors of fine antique music. There's going to be most everything we play is going to be either near or over 100 years old,
Beautiful.
and I like to look for those old songs that have really sort of antiquated but quaint sort of lyrics to them, and then present them in a way that with a little bit of exaggeration here and there that might get a chuckle out of people. But we're all exhibitionists. I think that's part of why we do what we do, and I'm no different. But you made just the most excellent point that I want to come back to. You talk about what motivates you, and you say, well, it's your kids because you want to provide for them. You want to serve as an excellent example for them. You want to make sure that you are exhibiting your craft in such a way that's hospitable. So then I do need to perhaps ask my question just a little bit differently, because I understand what would motivate you to write, and that's excellent. But what I'm interested in is that really what you said, inspiration. Where do you find your inspiration for songs?
Yeah, so my inspiration for songs is stories, is people's stories, is my story. Again, I'm an avid person, I'm an avid analyst of situations, right? So I like to break down what happened and talk about it. I feel like when I really started getting into songwriting, I was about 22, and songwriting became something different than just songwriting for me. But before that, I was just learning the craft of writing a song. And then it became a tool for me to express how I was feeling. Because when I really started, at the same time that I was starting to really get into songwriting was because I was going through a really hard situation. Not as hard as, other situations that are a lot worse than this. It was just a breakup, but I was young and my heart was broken, and I was dealing with it by writing songs. And at the time, I would go and write songs in my car in an empty parking lot because I couldn't write songs around the other people that I was with. Because if they heard the lyrics that I was throwing in there, they would be like, wow, you can't talk like that. That's too dark. It doesn't talk enough about Jesus and yada, yada, yada. So for me, it was my version of standing on the beach screaming, fuck you. I don't know if I can swear, but like, You know what I mean? That's what songwriting is for me. It's my version of you know, and sometimes I go out in the bush and, you know, yell into the wilderness, but like this, that my version of that is actually songwriting. So it's a way for me to deal with what I'm feeling, to figure out what I'm feeling and to try and heal from it. So I remember there was an artist who just passed away last year, actually, in Australia. His name was Archie Roach. He's an Australian iconic legend, Indigenous man, beautiful man. And he had this song called Took the Children Away, which was his story from when he was a little boy. They got taken away from his mum, from the government, from his family, because they were black. He was a little bit fairer skin. And the government at the time was taking fair, light-skinned children away from their families. And the reason why he wrote that song, he didn't actually want to write that song, because his uncle asked him, and he said, "Why don't you write about that?" And he's like, I don't remember it. And his uncle said, "Yeah, but I do. I was there that day." Mm-hmm. And so he wrote that song. It's a very powerful, powerful song. And he said, "The reason why I sing it is because every time I sing it now, I sing about that pain and all that hurt. Every time I sing it, I let a little bit more of it go."
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it, you know, when he said that, I was like, man, that's how I feel about my music too. Mm-hmm. Like, that's so true. So, you know, I like, that's when I started to become unafraid of what I was writing. And so again, when I'm inspired to write something, it's just there and it happens. And I try my best to let it come out of me without filtering it, without thinking, oh, they're not going to like this, or, oh, they're not going to like that, or whatever. It's just like, no, this is me. And I'm sure. And the other inspiration why I do it is because I feel a lot of things. I'm a very open person with my feelings. You know, like if I'm feeling like shit, I'll talk about it. If I'm going through something, I'll talk about it. If I'm feeling depressed, I'll talk about it, because it's powerful. It takes away a bit of the power that it might have over you. And so the other reason why I share these things is because I understand that I've come to understand that when I do share my feelings, it's more than likely that somebody else is feeling that too.
Oh, yes.
And a number of times I've heard people come up to me like in tears, just being like, "I thought I was the only one that felt like this." I love that, you know. And it's so crazy, because it doesn't matter how old you are or where you come from or what you've done in your life. I've had so many people come up to me that like, I should be learning from them. And they're like, "How the hell do you know this?" And I'm like, "Well, maybe it's not for me to know, man. Maybe this song's for you. Maybe it's your story, you know?" So I don't know. It's just, I love songwriting and I love music so much, because it's, to me, it's actually the closest thing to whatever real magic is. You know what I mean? And that might be it. You know,
yeah, well,
this
you
might
know,
be one of the things that is real magic. You know,
I never will forget a documentary I used to show my one of my classes at the university on the blues, and one of the old blues musicians that they were interviewing, he says one of the ways to get rid of the blues is to sing about you know, or to sing the blues, sing about whatever your troubles are. And that helps you kind of get that off your chest, and helps you get, you know, kind of get away. And it's like, sort of like dealing with pain of a wound. You know, you're always going to have the scar, but the pain over time lessens and lessens. You're still reminded of that scar or that wound, but the actual pain tends to get less and less. And, you know, and I see and hear that a lot on your new record, because I've listened to your album I don't know how many times, a number of times, and I've reviewed the lyrics, and you know, I'm gonna just paint with a very broad brush stroke here for a moment. We'll get more specific into your album here in a little bit, but many of your songs are about loss and about redemption and about healing and about hurt, but forgiving people for the hurt. I mean, there's forgiveness, there's loss, there's healing. These are some common themes that I kind of see in your songs. as well as a longing for your hometown. You know, I looked up when I was listening to the song Mossman, and I looked up Mossman online, and what a beautiful, beautiful place. I'm really not that familiar with Australia, but I looked at some of the photographs that were online, and it was just beautiful. But I really feel like that it would be redundant for me to ask you one of the questions I had in mind, and that is about the aesthetics of your songs in terms of providing an emotional cleansing for you or your listeners, because you're able to provide that story that's relaying that particular pain or that healing that people can then vicariously experience, and therefore then it helps lessen the pain that they're carrying, and maybe that does the same for you as a performer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, it's when you say that you're an analyst, I really see that in your lyrics, that you really are. I mean, I would say that you are an observer either of other people and their actions, or just an observer of your own feelings. You have that, you know, it, being an educator, we used to have a term, it's called metacognition. Mm-hmm. And that's thinking about why you think what you think.
Yes. Yes.
And I think that that's what you engage in. You really kind of take, you know, a step outside yourself and examine and analyze a particular feeling that you're experiencing, and looking at all the various accoutrements that you know kind of go along with that, and describe that in the song as you're relaying that to us. That's what I see, but let me hear what you think. I might totally be off base here.
No, that's a great observation. You said something about the blues there before. Mm-hmm. You know, the best way to get rid of the blues is to sing the blues. I 100% agree with that, because let's say that you were going through a really hard time, you had the blues. Most of the time, you can't just go to a bunch of friends and just start talking about it, you know, all the time, because that's what you're feeling all the time. Right. People would get sick of you, fair enough. Mm-hmm. But then you put it in a song and people are willing to listen to it. And it gives you a fun way to talk about how you're feeling. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. for me, when I write the songs that I write, again, it's about analyzing those things, analyzing why I'm thinking, what's behind my thinking, you know? How do I put this? You'd think a songwriter could string a sentence together.
That's okay. Sometimes we all get tongue-tied.
Yeah. Well, here's another reason why I chose to go the route of singing a lot of songs about my feelings. I've grown up, and like a lot of us have, being taught or being, you know, socially educated in the community where they're like, men don't cry. Mm-hmm. Men don't talk about, just suck it up. Don't talk about your feelings. Shut up, mm-hmm. you know, go away. Mm-hmm. Let's just mm-hmm. drink. Real healthy stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I just remember somebody in my life went through a really horrible bout of depression for a long time, mm-hmm. to the point where they couldn't even get outside the door. Like they couldn't, like they would hide behind the couch when somebody knocked on the door. And when this person started getting better, I remember them saying to me, I said to them, I was like, hey, you know, like, this is cool. You came out with us today. Like this is, I haven't, you know, like this is interesting. Like you don't usually do this. And they said, you know what? Like I'm starting to feel better. You know, he was obviously taking some naturopathic medication that was working, mm-hmm. but he said, the biggest thing that's helped me is talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was 14, 15 years old when this person said that to me. And I remember from that, in that moment, I said to myself, I made a deal with myself, if I ever go through depression or something really hard, I'm going to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
I have to talk about it. And that's what I said to myself. I can't keep it to myself. Mm-hmm. I have to talk about it. And so songwriting has become that way for me, where that's where I talk about it. You know, I talk about a lot of stuff to my wife. She's a wonderful person that hears a lot of the shit that I'm thinking. And, you know, I definitely need a therapist probably, but the songwriting for me is a way for me to offer. That's another offering to give to people that don't know how to deal with their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
See, I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with facing my feelings. I don't have I don't have the issue of ignoring my feelings, because
mm-hmm.
I pay attention to them and I try to sort it out. And most of the time, I don't need to worry about it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, I've had a lot of people come up to me all the time when I'm playing music, and they're like, I'm really feeling what you're saying about tonight, you know? And I'm like, well, sure. Great. Like,
yeah.
They're like, people have come up to me and said, I haven't been knowing how to express what I'm feeling or talk about, or even, I haven't even understood what I'm feeling. And this song, this one here, really untangled the confusion of what I was trying to figure out how I was feeling. And, you know, a lot of it is men.
Sure it is.
A lot of women, obviously a lot of women come up to me and talk about it, but a lot of men, a lot of older men, a lot of young guys too, a lot of young adult guys come up to me and are just like, man, like, God damn, like, you're making me feel something, you know? And I'm like, good, you know, this is good for you, hopefully, you know?
Yeah, well, that's so typically male, is we don't express our feelings. And I know my wife is always on me about that. She says, you don't tell me enough about what you're feeling, and so on and so forth. And she's right. And it's just, I don't know where we, you know, I guess we have to maybe blame the way that men are sometimes portrayed in motion pictures, you know, strong, silent, tough guys, you know, kind of thing. I don't know, you know, that sort of, but, you know, you bring up another really great point about artists. You know, I've often told my students at the university, one of the purposes of art is to get us, and for what artists do is to stop to get us to think about, because artists look at things and see things and create things that perhaps present ordinary everyday stuff in different light. But you just raised another really great issue, not a question. And that is that artists teach us how to feel.
That's exactly, yeah. That's what I want to do with my art, is help people feel something, whether it's happy, sad, joy, confusion, whatever, you know, like, it's like, that's the whole, because we're feeling beings, right?
Yeah. I saw a wonderful quote on Facebook the other day. I wish I could now remember who it was attributed to. But the quote said, if you can feel pain, it means you're alive. If you can feel other people's pain, it means that you're a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that as artists and singer-songwriters who tell stories with lyrics and music, in a sense, are helping people feel their pain. They're helping people be more fully human.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's, I hate to say that what we do is a public service, but in a way it is a great gift to give to humanity, to our fellow humans. So, you know, all the more to us for doing that.
Absolutely. Well,
let's get right to your latest album, which is entitled Mikhail Laxton. You named it right after yourself, and nothing wrong with that at all. I mean, it's you. Song and everything is coming from you. But would you highlight a few of the songs on the album for us, and kind of give us some insight in terms of their inspiration and maybe your creative process for writing the songs?
Okay. Let me pull up the album here so I can look at all the titles.
Okay, yeah, sure, I understand. I'm doing the same thing so that I can follow along with you.
Absolutely. Okay, so we're gonna You want me to just give you some inspiration behind some of the songs?
Yeah. Well, I could pick out some if you like that.
Let's do that.
Okay, let's do that. Let's just start with Four String Cowboy.
Oh, okay.
That was a really neat song. And talk about that for us.
Yeah, so that was about 2 days. It was the day I first met my dad and the day I lost my dad.
Okay.
Two different days. So I first met my dad when I was around about eight years old. Mm-hmm. I'd only ever spoken to him a handful of times on the phone up until that point. But the crazy, there's a crazy story behind how I met my dad, mm-hmm. What led to me meeting my dad for the first time, but that's another story. I met my dad at my grandparents' house, his parents' house.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd only just met my grandparents that same year.
Mm-hmm.
It was wild. So the day that I met him is exactly how it is in the song. We were just playing at my grandparents' place one day, and then this big black cowboy walks up the stairs with a big 10-gallon hat on and big boots, and he picks me up and says, "Hey, boy, how are you?" And I'm like, "Good, who are you?" And he laughed and he looked at me and he said, "I'm your father." And I looked back at him and I was like confused. And I said, "No, you're not. My dad's Joe," who was this Italian guy that my mom was with since I could remember.
Mm-hmm.
And so he kind of just laughed. He's like, "No, I'm your real dad." And I was like, "All right, well, whatever that means." And yeah. And then, yeah, like I remember that day as clear as a bell. He came upstairs. My sister knew exactly who he was for some reason. She's younger mm-hmm. than me. She just ran straight up to him and said, Dad. And then I met his girlfriend, Rose. That's a real story. Mm-hmm. You know, he came around with a girl named Rose. Yeah. And then the first lyrics are about the day that his grand auntie came knocking on my door at like 8 a.m. and told me that my dad died.
Mm.
And I was really, really confused. I was really sad, but then leading up to his funeral and obviously after, there was a lot that was going through my being. I was only 18 years old when he passed. He was only 45, I think, 44, maybe. And yeah, like it was just a rough time. Like I obviously had only just, you know, started to get to know my dad at that point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He was, you know, he was a great musician. I got to see him play music once.
Mm-hmm.
He was a radio personality. He was the first Indigenous cameraman for a major network television station
mm-hmm.
In Australia. He was very smart cookie. But again, most of those things were things that I was told about.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't actually get to express because I didn't grow up with him. He wasn't around. He was in a different state. And when I did finally get to know him, he already became very sick. We didn't know that it was going to be fatal. So, you know, he was an alcoholic. And by the time I'd met him, he wasn't drinking, but the damage was already done. And, mm-hmm. you know, that was when I lived with him, I lived with him when I turned 15. I lived with him till I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved, and by 18, he was gone. So
mm-hmm.
it was pretty rough. It was really rough. And, you know, obviously when you lose someone over time, you start breaking down the decisions they made that may have hurt you for some reason. Like some mm-hmm. reason you start thinking about all the times they hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go through feeling, you know, thinking about all the good times you had with them. And then all of the times they hurt me. And the thing that hurt me the most was not having him there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's just like, why did you do that? You know, and I've had to struggle with that again.
Yes.
When I became a father
Mm-hmm.
And I held my kids for the first time, and I'm starting to get emotional now. I just cannot, like, I'm like, what kind of father would do this? Mm-hmm. How could you leave? I could never picture. I have a hard time going on tour. I have a hard time going away for the night just to play mm-hmm. a show. And I'm sure a lot of fathers out there relate to this, but
mm-hmm.
it just be like, all right, cool, I'm out. Like, you know. So anyway, when I finally did get to meet my dad, he was very charming, very smart. But again, like, I only saw glimpses of that. And that's why I wrote that song, Four String Cowboy. He was a bass player.
Oh, okay.
He was a bass player for a lot of big country names in Australia.
Okay.
He went on tour with and did that stuff with them, even right up until he died. He actually got better enough to go on tour and travel overseas.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden he was gone. So he was just kind of, he knew he was dying. So I guess he was just living his life, you know.
I understand.
And that's why I say, you know, he's a four string cowboy. I guess the apple didn't roll. I'm a musician.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
And I wish that I could tell you more, but I just don't know. So a lot of people in the past that knew about my dad or whatever, like, or knew my dad, would ask questions. And I'm like, I don't know what to tell you, man. Like, apparently he was really cool, really nice guy, charming. I saw glimpses of that. He was a lovely guy, very patient. But I didn't get to see the real him that everybody else told me stories about.
Right,
so
right.
I wish that I could tell you more, but I just don't know.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you about the significance of the title, but you know, he was a bass player and a bass has four mm-hmm. strings.
Yeah. He was a cowboy.
Right. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a wonderful story. It's a wonderful song. Would you mind talking about Something That Was Gone?
Yeah. I had been living, me and my wife and my son and I had been living in a old apartment in this rough area of town. Not unlike where I grew up, you know, as a child, but it was very different for my wife. She grew up very differently to me, but the area wasn't the best to be around, you know, and mm-hmm. whatever. So naturally there was like a bit of anxiety that I was dealing with because of that. And I remember feeling anxious one day. I woke up and I woke up from a dream that wasn't actually a dream. I was just dreaming about another memory. Mm-hmm. And everything was the same. And I was like, why? And it was a bad memory. It was like a memory that I usually go back to, or that pops up into my head when I start feeling anxious.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized this one day, I was like, man, I'm starting to feel like I'm going to have a panic attack. And then all of a sudden this quote came into my head from somebody that told me this, maybe a teacher told me this in high school, that and I don't know whether it's true or not, but it helped me in this moment. Every 7 years, your cells in your body regenerate. Mm-hmm. And you're not the same person. And for some reason that just clicked in my head that I was like, wow, I'm not the same person. That person doesn't exist anymore. He existed, but I now exist today. Even yesterday, that happened, but it's not continuing to happen. I'm here now. And even tomorrow, it's not here yet. I'm here now. So it's just mm-hmm. like this really big breakthrough in my mind. It's like, it doesn't matter. Just relax. Only right now matters, you know. And sometimes if you're going through that, right now sucks. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
But it is all that matters. And it's like, you know what? Let's make it matter. If it sucks, then let's make it matter. Let's turn it around. Let's do something that's going to make us feel better, whatever.
Right.
And it's really hard to do that sometimes, right? So I just started writing this song, and it was about spending all my time, any spare time I had, any brain power I had, when I wasn't working or when I wasn't playing with my kid or hanging out with my wife or having fun, every other minute, or songwriting, every other minute was spent thinking about the past, shit things that happened to me, shit things
mm-hmm.
that I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was like, this is so dumb. Why am I living like this? And I don't know. I just had a bit of breakthrough in that moment. And I wrote that song within like half an hour.
Wow.
And I felt like the song was helping me.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And well, I knew it was going to help other people too.
Yeah, I mean, it's, again, it's sort of like you were getting rid of your blues by writing a song about, you know, I mean, it wasn't a blues song per se, but it was getting your emotions out and mm-hmm. and your and talking about, you know, what was on your mind and those kinds of things. Yeah, those are kind of very important kinds of feelings and important things to express. You know, one of the things, songs I'd really like to have you talk about is, and I was just going back, I'm just checking quickly the analytics for my podcast, because I know it lists for me what countries I have listeners, and I don't recall if I have any listeners in Australia. But would you talk about the song Mossman and talk about your hometown, especially for those of us who are not all that familiar with Australia, or certainly the part of Australia where you've come from, and tell us about it.
So Mossman is a very, very small town. Dare I say it's a country town. It's in between a rainforest, and it's right on the coast in between the Great Barrier Reef as well. So it's a very, very beautiful spot.
Yes.
Yeah. And my indigenous tribe is from there as well. So from that particular town, there's a place called the Mossman Gorge where we came down from. So it's a beautiful place. I mean, growing up there was, I guess, who you are, but mm-hmm. for us it was a little harder. mm-hmm. You know, I like most of my upbringing in that town. It lacks a lot of opportunities, but you know, it was a great place to learn things that I'm very interested in, like nature, mm-hmm. camping, hunting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I grew up in a farming family there, and yeah, it was just a good town. I mean, you get older and you realize that there's not many options, there's not many opportunities. You either play rugby and get a job at the local sugar mill, and that's kind of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's a bit more tourism in that town, mm-hmm. which is really, mm-hmm. really beautiful. But yeah, I mean, the reason why I wrote that song is because it is a very, very beautiful place.
Mm-hmm.
I live in Ottawa, Canada now, and mm-hmm. no disrespect to Ottawa, this is my home now. I do love it here, but like, I miss the beach. I miss being able to do a bunch of shit without permits.
Yeah.
You know, like, I live in a government city. I live in the capital of Canada, and sometimes it feels like you can't fart in public without having a permit for it. So it's like, it's a bit much, right? So yeah. And like for example, like, I can walk around in my hometown with a machete and a spear, and the cops won't even blink at it because they know, sure, I'm just going hunting, you know? And I, for example, like in Mossman, I can just go set up a camp under one of the bridges near the rivers in town.
Yes.
And no one's going to bother me. Like, you can just camp there for a couple of nights, or you can even stay there long term. It's like,
sure,
hey, whatever. They just make sure you're okay and nothing's going on. But like, it's very, very free. It's a very free place to grow up, especially if you're right into hunting and camping, mm-hmm. And all those fun things, you know. You do have to be careful, obviously, because our town is home to like 8 out of 10 of the most dangerous snakes and spiders.
Oh, my.
And, and crocodiles. And
oh, my, that that's stuff, right.
So, yeah.
Well, I guess, but, you have one trade-off for the other, because I know there's probably not much surfing in Canada, but you don't have dangerous snakes and crocodiles and that sort of thing and spiders in Ottawa.
But, yeah, but we've got a lot more bigger things that can kill you.
Yeah. Like bears
and moose and, you know, whatever else. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's always, like I told you earlier, from the few photographs I saw online, it looks, Mossman looks like a beautiful, beautiful, place. And I did check. I do have listeners in Australia. Amazing. Not a lot.
More after this.
All I can say is I was just checking what I have in that part of the world. I have at least one listener in Australia and at least one in New Zealand, but That may have just been they just checked me out once. I don't know that they're necessarily regular, but I'm always fascinated by the part of the world, and I've never traveled there, but I think I'd like to, and I love Canada too. I have mm-hmm. Of course, Canada's a next door neighbor to us in Wisconsin, and I didn't know about all those regulations. I'll have to be real careful about my flatulence. I highlighted or asked you to highlight, three of the songs that really stood out to me. Are there any other songs that you would like to talk about with my listeners that other than the three that we've highlighted? Or is that a real hard question? Because I know songs are a lot like children, and you can't pick a favorite, and you can't,
No, you know what? Like, I would have gone with Four String Cowboy, because, like, I'll tell you this: like, it wasn't a single, but that was personally my favorite track that came out of it.
All right.
So it wasn't necessarily my favorite song on the album when we were making it, but after we made it, just the production, how it came together so smoothly, and like we did it in a bit more of a country, like there's a lot of pedal steel on that song.
Yep.
Because my dad was a country musician. He was specifically a country musician. And he actually introduced me in a big way to country music. Because I wasn't all that interested in it back in the day. And he took me out to see a country artist one day, and that was the first time country music actually like got its hooks in me, and I was like, oh wow, like I'm feeling this. That was the first time I felt it, so I would have gone with that. I mean, I love all the songs. Okay. I love Leaving You With Less, but usually I put it down to this: what song, if I'm going to listen to my own album, what song am I going to put on first? And it's probably Four String Cowboy. Love the way that song moves and bounces, and it's a good groove,
Well, there must be something to it, because it was the one that really stood out to me. That's why I asked about it first.
Amazing.
So it's amazing that we're thinking. But you brought up about your production team, and you had a great team help you with the recording. Of the songs on the album, which songs changed the most from when you went into the studio as opposed to what came out on the recording? And I'm thinking in terms of the contributions and the influence of your production team.
Yeah, so I'm a ballad writer, I would say. Mm-hmm. I like slow, folky, feeling songs, as you can tell. A lot of the songs were actually a lot slower than they are now. Slow Motion was quite slow. We sped it up a bit and we made it more bluesy. That was actually a very folky sort of song originally. Leaving You With Less was quite folky and slow as well. It wasn't too slow, but it was still a little bit upbeat, but we really got that thing moving. The song that changed in the biggest way. I would say Leaving You With Less. That song came out bigger than I ever thought it would ever sound, for sure. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the record, man, was like the whole entire record, I would have to say, was very instinctual.
Okay.
We didn't push anything too far one way or the other. We just like, no, this feels good. Like, we're grooving, right? And like James Brown says in that movie, does it sound good? Does it feel good? Then it is good.
So that's
just,
right.
Yeah. We just kind of went with that. And Aaron actually, Aaron's an amazing producer, so I'm always leaning on the folky side of things. And during the production, he said to me one day, he's like, I kind of only do one thing, and that's rock and roll. And I was like, well, yeah, like we added a lot of rock and roll to this record, but I think we did it in a very rootsy way, I think.
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
Because
I don't know how people are perceiving it, but yeah.
Well, see, when I listen to the album, I definitely would, I hate pigeonholing, but, you've got to go somewhere that you really fall into that Americana country kind of category. I mean, there's that, a lot of the music that we call Americana does have that rootsy sort of sound, either from a country standpoint or a rock standpoint. And, And yet there's also, as and I think you nailed it, there's also that strong folk element mm-hmm. that's there. And I think the folk element is not just the acoustic guitar sounds, but also the storytelling and the lyrical content, things like that. But, you know, if I were pinned against the wall and say, categorize Mikhail Laxton, I would have to say it's a Americana roots country sound. Amazing. I mean, that's what comes, that's what came across yeah. to me. And so I think that's, I'm always curious about the creative, how the creative genius works when you're in a studio and somebody says, hey, let's try this. And then you go, wow, that's great. You know, yeah. how it kind of goes back to your earlier metaphor about a great chef, you know, like getting, you know, working with a particular dish and going, gee, I wonder if I add just a little bit more of this spice and wow, yeah. you know, and it just makes the flavors jump because it's all so much there's about chemistry, you know, mm-hmm. great cooking is about chemistry as much as it is, you know, and how flavors and so forth are enhanced or whatnot. I mean, what little bit I know about cooking, but mm-hmm. I do read and see things. But so that's really interesting. Well, I've got a couple of questions for you that might be difficult to answer, but I want you to give it your best shot. What was the hardest Absolutely. Song on the album to write?
To write? Oh, let me have yeah. a look.
Which was the hardest one to write? What was you, or to, and when I say write, I don't mean necessarily the physical aspect of writing, but mm-hmm. I guess to squeeze out of yourself.
Hmm. Oh, leaving you with less. Okay. Far. All right. Yeah. I actually tried to write that with two other writers before I like because I do a lot of co-writing and mm-hmm. you know, most of the time I write most of the song myself and then I struggle to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I bring someone in to help me finish it off. But this song, I had one half of a verse, and that was it. And I knew, and I had what I thought was the chorus, which actually ended up then like is now the bridge in the song. Mm-hmm. That was originally the chorus. All I had was half of a verse and that entire bridge. And yeah, man, that song was cursed for a little bit. And it also we almost didn't write it because by the time I brought it to the third writer, Dan Hoesch, I said, look, I've taken this to two other writers. And he's like, don't give it. Don't let's not do it then. And I was like, really? And he's like, yeah, it's fucking cursed. Don't worry about it. So I just said, okay, look, I actually think there really is something here. And I just sang the first half of verse. And he's like, yeah, this is pretty good. Like there's really good, something good here. And so we worked on that, I think on over two sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, no, that's not true. We worked that on one long ass session. Mm-hmm. And it was a grind at first,
mm-hmm.
but then once we got like the chorus going, it was like, yeah, this is good. This is
yeah, cool. The pieces all fell into place.
Yeah. And okay. that song. Yeah. I don't know, man. Like I really wanted to, I think at the time that I was writing it, I was in a headspace back then that where I was in between quite a big life decision and whether I was going to stay in that thing or leave it, you know, if I would have stayed in that, I don't think that song would have got written. But leaving that realm of thinking
mm-hmm.
actually like broke a lot of filtering off of me.
Uh-huh.
It was like the last bit that I needed in my life to get away from me. So I don't know if this makes sense. I don't want to ruffle any feathers, but it was just like with a belief system in
sure,
particular.
Sure, sure, I got
and
you.
And I was in that place where I was like coming, like I was pretty sure that I was out and not in, and the struggle of like how I used to write where I would censor a lot of shit and not pull back the curtain too far on it. I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to do it. This is what happened to me. This is actually bull crap. And I'm saying it in this song. And you know, and that was the story. It's just like a fucked up situation happened. I got out of it and it sucked. And that's it. It just sucked. You. And You know, I came into that place with a bad situation, you know, coming out of a bad situation, and I left another bad situation with even less than I came with, which was nothing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like that's what leaving you with less means. It's,
I got it's you. Yeah.
Less of what I had when I came into this, which was nothing.
I got you. Well, then conversely to that, what was the easiest song on the album to write?
It was the last song on the record.
Okay.
You Come to Me.
Okay.
So that one is about me and my wife and, you know, my pride getting in the way. And I'd been writing songs this particular season because I write my songs in seasons. I'm always writing songs, but then there's a season where I'm like balls to the walls, to the wall, writing, co-writing, everything. So I was just getting back into the writing season and I'd written like maybe 15 crap songs. And I got up from one of those crap songs to go get something to eat. And this song just boom, like started hitting me. It literally took me from getting to my desk to the coffee table, which was like three steps. And I had to grab my guitar and it just like came out of me in 10 minutes.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing?
It was unreal. Yeah.
Yeah. So after writing 15 crap songs, that seemed to be what got the flow going. And then bam, you just hit with this other one. Well, that's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah. I've had other composers and songwriters kind of relay similar things, you know, that when they feel like they get stuck, there's a guy in New York who's a composer I've interviewed, and he says when he gets a block, he will purposely sit down and write the worst piece of music he can write. He said, but the actual physical act of kind of getting things is what gets his juices flowing. And then things start to come. And I think that there's something. Well, okay. Now, you're probably one of those. You're constantly writing. You're constantly finding ways to express yourself. But now that your album is out, are you planning your next album?
We're planning a tour, an international tour, just over in the UK there.
Okay.
And a bit of Europe. Still gathering some dates for that. But I'm using the winter time to write, demo, and probably record an EP or something like that.
But this tour is mostly to promote
this album.
Mikhail Laxton. Okay. Yes. So what more can you tell us? This is going to be a European and a UK tour. When is this going to happen? When are you planning to go?
I think it's February or March. Maybe. Okay. I think we're going in January.
Okay. So just in a month or so.
Yeah, we're going in January and then we're going again in March and then probably May. But but I will be down in the States for Folk Alliance International in Kansas City whenever that's happening, which I think is in February.
Okay. So
yeah, I'll be down there for that conference.
Okay. All right. Well, that's awesome. And then you got new songs ready to go. How about are you doing any live shows at any clubs or anything in Ottawa?
No, I'm actually right now. I'm taking my foot off the pedal from playing some live shows just because this year in particular with the album release, and I was also in the UK earlier this year and did a whole bunch of traveling, and then the album release came out. There was a bunch of shows, some festivals. I'm beat, and I'm just like right now.
I just need a break.
So everything now is just we're just building some stuff for the UK.
Okay.
I have one little appearance I'm making on the 22nd of December in Ottawa here with some other great musicians and singer songwriters, and then I'll start booking again. You know, I'll start booking again in January, but we're mostly trying to figure out a tour.
Overseas.
Yeah.
What would be some typical venues that where you might play in Ottawa? I mean, if I could magically, hop in the car and drive up sometime and to catch you, typically, where are some of the places you might play?
The places I will put myself is there's one spot and it's called Irene's Pub.
Irene's Pub.
I love that. So that's a bit of a legendary joint in Ottawa. There's been a lot of great music played there over the years. I've only been playing there for maybe 3 years since the pandemic. And every time I go, we usually sell out and there's always new people there. But it's a place that they've set up, they've got such a good reputation with the music that comes in there that no matter what's on, people will go just to check out, oh, let's go to Irene's. There's, you know, usually the music's good. They don't really care who's playing, but it's a lot of music lovers that go to see music acts, and the music is always good there. So
okay,
that's kind of the one place that I've you know, started to call home. I've played around a bunch of other places, but that's been the spot that's kind of become my home. No disrespect to the other joints.
No, that's quite all right. I was just curious. I was going to, I was just curious to see how far of a drive it is. Oh, 14 hours and 10 minutes. Well,
yeah, not long at all.
No, not bad at all. I could hop in the car and let's see. Oh, I could even go through the UP of Wisconsin. And over to Sudbury and then down.
There you go.
Oh, wow. It's 15 hours that way. But, you know, at least I'd be in Wisconsin more. Well, that's not so bad. I mean, that's just a day, half a day's drive. You never know. I might just show up there sometime. Well, that's really awesome. Irene's Pub, because I would love to hear you play live sometime. Well, Mikhail, we've been at this for about an hour, and I try to be thorough in the questions I ask, but I know I'm not perfect. So is there anything else you'd like to add or tell my audience that I have not asked you about?
No, that's good. I mean, I usually leave it up to the host, but I hope you enjoyed the interview and I hope you enjoy my music.
I've had a really nice time talking with you, and Mikhail, I want to thank you for taking time to talk with me today, and wish you all the best with what I'm sure will be a continued successful musical future.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. This has been my pleasure, and I'll say this is probably the best podcast I've done all year, so I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much.
And good on you for doing what you're doing, man. This is amazing. I'm going to check out your podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate the compliment. And you have a great rest of the day.
You too, mate. Take care.
Bye-bye. My discovery composer of the week is Carl Friedrich Abel. Born in Köthen in 1723, he died in London in 1787. He was no doubt a pupil of his father Christian, especially for the bass viol. But on his father's death in 1737, Carl Friedrich may have turned to the former relationship with the Bach family and gone to Leipzig to study. By 1743, Abel was a player in the court orchestra under Hasse in Dresden. Abel left Dresden in 1757 or 1758. He then traveled, visiting the house of Goethe's family in Frankfurt and probably the musical centers of Mannheim and Paris. During the 1758-1759 season, Abel went to London, the city where he was to spend most of his remaining years. His first public concert there was on April 5th, 1759. Abel demonstrated his versatility by performing on the bass viol, the harpsichord, and Sir Edward Walpole's newly invented pentachord, as well as being the composer of most of the music. Over the next 5 years, Abel increased his reputation in London through his own annual concerts and through his direction of the concerts of other artists. In 1760, he was granted a royal privilege for the publication of his music in London. His association with J.C. Bach began late in 1763.
Both men were appointed chamber musicians to Queen Charlotte in about 1764, posts they held until their deaths. Both were also friends to the Mozarts during their visit to London and served as mentors to the young Wolfgang. The association between Abel and Bach led to the establishment of the Bach-Abel Concert Series. This annual series of 10 to 15 concerts began on January 23, 1765, and continued up through May 9, 1781. Abel's contribution to the Bach-Abel concerts included the direction on alternate evenings. The concerts introduced to London many musicians from the continent. Abel seems to have visited Paris with some regularity in the 1770s and 1780s. He was said to be teaching the viol there, and it was probably he who introduced the several performers from Paris featured at the concerts. The directors also supplied most of the music that was given. Much of it must appear among Abel's published symphonies, concertos, quartets, and trios. Those and his keyboard sonatas, designed for the amateur, were published from 1765. At this time, Abel was highly regarded as a performer on the bass viol, and at most concerts he displayed his talents in a solo or concerto. The concerts Bach and Abel gave at court, for example, one for the Prince of Wales' fifth birthday on August 12, 1767, were in a sense an offshoot of their series. Their influence is also seen in the number of individual benefit concerts that they were asked to direct both in London and in nearby cities during the summer. At the end of the 1782 season, Abel left London to visit his homeland. He also spent some time at the court of Friedrich Wilhelm, Crown Prince of Prussia at Potsdam. Abel had dedicated his Opus 15 quartets to the prince in 1780, and now he so impressed with his viol playing that he received 100 louis d'or and a gold snuff box. From the beginning of 1785 until his death, Abel was again active at the Hanover Square Rooms. His last concert appearance was as a bass viol virtuoso in a benefit for Mrs. Billington on May 21, 1787. The final concert represents an act of generosity, typical of the warm-hearted Abel, who often gave concerts for the needy and helped to introduce young performers. His generosity was equaled by the strength of his attachment to his friends. Abel appears to have had a particular fondness for art and artists. He was also good friends with the Mannheim violinist Wilhelm Kramer, and the two shared an apartment before Kramer's second marriage from 1776 to about 1779. Abel's reputation as a performer is closely connected with the bass viol, and Abel was primarily a composer of instrumental music. His few vocal pieces are relatively unimportant. The symphonies, sonatas, and bass viol pieces form the largest groups among his output. Abel's music is generally genial, energetic, and light-hearted. The result is a refined, urbane version of the Mannheim style, with perhaps an Italian influence evidenced in the more vocal melodies and lighter moods. Burney remarked that his invention was not unbounded, and his exquisite taste and deep science prevented the admission of whatever was not highly polished. He commented on a certain languor and praised his harmony and selection of sounds as models of perfection. The All Music Guide lists 95 recordings of Abel's chamber music, 16 recordings of his concerti, 14 recordings of his symphonies, 7 recordings of his other orchestral music, and 1 recording of his aria for soprano and chamber ensemble. In my show notes is a link to a YouTube video of a performance of Abel's Allegro in D minor, WKO 208, performed by Shirley Edith Hunt, viola da gamba. That wraps episode number 172. My show notes, along with links to artist websites, recording label websites, YouTube videos of artist performances, are all posted on my Facebook page, The Musical Universe of Professor Hurst. Next week, I'll be interviewing Maine-based singer-songwriter Caroline Cotter. Other upcoming interviews include Nashville-based Americana folk singer-songwriter Charlotte Morris, singer-songwriter Annie Moskow, and New York City-based drummer Ross Peterson. So don't touch that dial and stay tuned. If you have questions, comments, or a suggestion of an artist, composer, or musical style for me to consider, you may email me at hurstc@uwm.edu. So until next time, this is Professor Craig W. Hurst and Carmel the Wonder Dog, signing off from the Musical Universe of Professor Hurst. Have a great day.